and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map, and today my guest is Tudor Palagitsa, CEO and founder of Campedia, a digital marketplace that acts as a one-stop shop for parents looking for local programming for their kids. In light of the pandemic, Tudor has pivoted to provide more information on health and safety as well as virtual programming for kids. Tudor, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Natalie. It's really a pleasure to be here.
And here we mean our homes, because we are definitely doing this virtually. And so I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk about Campedia. I know it's a bit of a different start to the summer than you were expecting, but let's go back a little bit before we talk about kind of how COVID-19 has affected your business. And just tell me a little bit about how you've grown Campedia and kind of what you really kind of sought to do with the company. And I know last I spoke with you for a story for Innovation Map was exactly a year ago. So tell me a little bit about how you've grown the product.
Yeah, so a lot has happened in the past year. Thanks. Maybe I should start with a tiny bit of background. So my sister and I started this actually at the very end of 2018. So it's been about a year and a half. And last summer, we did a soft launch, a pilot in Central Houston, trying to give parents a way, a simple way to find camps and activities for their kids. I mean, I don't know if you're aware, but essentially as parents, it's extremely difficult to find information on camps and activities, what to do with your children, especially for a whole summer. And this was even before COVID-19. So since then, last summer was actually a very successful pilot in Central Houston. We had thousands of parents that came to our website and looked for activities, and we had a lot of the Central Houston providers listed on our website. And got really good feedback from parents. They loved it, and they're like, "Oh my God, this is such a help! It saves us so many hours of work." Then later in the year, we had two kind of big events for us. During the summer, we participated in Mass Challenge. That's an accelerator. It was their inaugural cohort in Houston. It was the first time they did it in Houston. That was very good. It was a compressed program, but we got a lot out of it, some lessons and better kind of talks on how to learn run the business, connections. And then we also did a crowdfunding, an equity crowdfunding in the second part of last year, which went really well. We raised almost twice as much as our initial ask. And that was great, because now it actually, we have a little bit of money to keep running through this year where a lot of changes have happened. And then at the end of last year, just a few days before winter break, we launched one of our major new features, which was to allow parents to actually book different camps through our platform. That makes it really seamless. You see something you like, you can do it right there on the spot. That was a good, kind of a very good trial. And then this year, we're really gearing up. February, March, we're gearing up. We're ready. This was going to be our big year, our big summer, our big launch. And then COVID hit.
Yeah. So that kind of, I guess, brings us up to speed. So talk me through how COVID-19 actually affected you and kind of the process that you've had to kind of go through the past few months and where you're at today.
Sure. So when it started, uncertainty, I guess the word uncertainty would describe everything, especially in this industry. There was nobody really knew what to happen. So everything kind of came to a halt. And for us, after kind of a few days of trying to be dazed and thinking what to do, what we decided is like, well, we need to focus on the community. What can we do at this time to help our community, which means both parents and the different organizations and local businesses that provide activities for kids. And that was tricky, because at the time, there was very little guidance and understanding of what needs to happen. And one of the first thing we did was talking to our different providers and finding, like, what do essential workers do with their kids? Essential, like, hospital workers, emergency response, policemen, if they have to go to work, do they have a need for for help with their kids. And we realized that there are still some daycares and places that were open and were providing services to this kind of emergency workers. So we started by making a list of those and blogging about it on our website, giving both parents, parents kind of a way to find these resources. And then slowly we started to try to understand what other options are. So we really had to kind of pivot and took off the table any kind of thought of a big splash and business this summer, but really focused on what can we do to help. And the other things we did was then we tried to find, okay, what can kids do? There was a time when schools were not even prepared for online learning. So there are a few weeks there when, I have two little girls at home and trying to figure out, okay, what do we do with them? We're still trying to work, kind of what are the options for parents? So we started to find first online and virtual activities and tell parents about different virtual activities provided. Again, we focused on local organizations, everything from the Children's Museum to different class providers and small businesses that were having some free or virtual classes, for example, get your kids to dance a little bit and relax or something like that.
Tell me a little bit about how you've kind of maintained that connection and kind of stayed, I guess, in the loop with what's going on in Houston, what different organizations are still providing services. And then kind of also in the same vein, how parents, what parents are looking for. And so how have you maintained that conversation and that connection between, you know, all the sides of the equation?
Yeah, that's been a bit of a challenge, especially initially. And in late March, early April, I think people were just not responding much because they were still in a daze. It was hard to that nobody figured out what they're gonna do or how to even start thinking about it. And that's when we realized that is something that we can help with. So one thing we did, we launched a Facebook group, like a closed community for camp providers and kids activity organizations. We have over 50 of them in the group and they're able to join pretty quick. And then we've been having Zoom meetings and calls with them. Essentially, week after week, people from like Asia Society, Harris County Department of Education, and many other small businesses like Code Ninjas, Challenge Island, so on, they came on board on these calls and we kind of discussed what are the options, what scenarios should we think about and how do we plan for the future. And people were really, really grateful to have an avenue to come together, exchange information, and actually help each other. So we also tried really hard to focus on providing very practical and specific help. So anything in the news, guidelines that were published, we started kind of researching and helping them create checklists and really bringing everybody in a collaborative way. So, for example, we shared some documents and everybody could contribute. Oh, we have a supplier for masks or for hand sanitizer. And everybody else was like, oh, that's great because we couldn't find any. So exchanging very practical information and giving an avenue for all these businesses to kind of get things off their chest, see that others are in the same boat and really help each other move forward. So that was really actually a really great and amazing response to that. Something really cool came out of that too. Oh. So somebody threw an idea. It's like, I wonder if parents would be more interested in maybe multiple different activities. And from just that point, multiple providers came together and we organized kind of a first of its kind, I think, at least in Houston, kind of a virtual combined camp where kids would have 4 hours and they get six different activities from different providers, but all kind of organized together. This coming Saturday, we're running the first pilot for that. So that was really great to see how they came together. And that was on the provider side, right?
So when you're working with these providers, what's their biggest concern? I know a lot of them are small businesses struggling, kind of like the rest of the world, unfortunately. But what are their concerns? And at the same time, what kind of opportunities have you seen them, I guess, take?
So the biggest concern on everybody's mind is the safety of the kids. So since most of them were providing in-person activities, some of them may have had some online presence before, but most of them didn't. So the first concern is safety of the kids. How do we keep the kids and their families safe? And then the uncertainty and the lack of guidance. Official guidance from local or state governments has been sorely lacking. And even now that there has been some recently, it's still relatively light. So the onus remains on them to figure out what's reasonable, what's not, how to run a program, and trying to reopen. So most of them are actually would like to reopen because there is a feeling that there will be parents who have a need for in-person camps. So those were the two main concerns, safety and kind of guidance and uncertainty. And then from there, practically, how do you run a program? How many parents are going to show up? Will parents who already registered ask for refunds? So having to give that money away while not having any or very little income this summer, it's been very difficult to figure things out. And then the transition to virtual has been a great idea, although most parents do not seem to be very interested in virtual programs or extended virtual programs for the summer. Putting your kids, I mean, I know from my kids, they're already tired of being in front of a screen. They've been doing homeschooling for a few months now. And if I tell them, oh, there's a camp, just sit for 3 hours in front of a screen every day, they're spacing out. So although that is great in small doses, it really cannot replace kind of the need for either engagement with other kids, kind of in-person interaction, or for some parents, the need for childcare. If offices are opening, that's the other part of this. If offices are opening and some parents will have to go in the office, they have no choice but to find childcare for their kids. And that is a big concern. What options do they have? So some are turning to nannies. Some are actually asking camps to open. But it's definitely going to be a summer that's very different than anything else.
So kind of in that same vein, how can parents, whether they're ready to send their, or maybe in some cases need to send their kids to a camp for the childcare purpose, or whether they're just trying to find maybe virtual programming because they're not quite ready to send their kids out into the world, how can they engage with Campedia in either way?
Yeah, so what we've tried to do for parents, that we kind of try to offer them multiple things. So being a smart startup, we're very early, we're still very small. So we did our best to pivot and to we brought some features early to launch them. So for example, we've launched a calendar of live events for kids. So if parents just need like a little bit of distraction for their kids, we've got a calendar of live events. Like tomorrow afternoon, my kids are starting to get bored. Go watch this half an hour, 1 hour kind of live dance class or yoga class or art or something. We've also been working with providers to list their virtual programs that are more structured. So, for example, like classes or camps, like every day, a few hours or something like that, program like in coding or STEM or arts or language. And then we've been also updating our list of in-person programs. There's already many that are open, are taking reservations, and every day we're updating that information. So Campedia becomes kind of one place where parents can find all the different options for their kids. Now, the biggest challenge for parents is still deciding what they want to do and what is safe for their own kids. To that extent, we're really also trying to understand more of that. So we created a survey that we started sending out this week for parents to understand their needs better. And we're sharing this with the provider community. It was actually built in collaboration with everybody else to figure out if parents are ready and when they're ready for in-person camps, what kind of safety measures they want to see in place to be comfortable sending their kids. What are their thoughts on virtual programs? How much are they willing to put their kids in virtual programs and what kind of programs and all those kind of things. So we're helping the community and helping everybody understand what parents think so we can provide and the best kind of avenues and the best information for parents as well and for providers to tune their programs to meet those needs.
I wonder maybe as a result of that survey or just kind of your interaction with parents, what are the biggest concerns that they have when it comes to what they're looking for in a camp? Is it smaller class sizes, maybe more outdoor activities? I don't know. What have you kind of learned?
Sure. So when we talk to parents, there seem to be two or three big camps. So there are some parents who are not going to send their kids to interactive, essentially to social gatherings this summer. They're afraid that the risk profile has not actually significantly changed the disease, right? So they're going to keep their kids at home. They'll either do some find nannies, just stay with their kids at home if they have that opportunity, or use virtual programs to a certain extent to supplement. At the other end of the spectrum, there are many parents who either have to go to work or are so tired of their kids being bored and around at home and them having to work that they're really looking forward to send their kids out to in-person programs and have them go to day camps where they can get enrichment, they can get some social interaction. So there's a small, but that's still a relatively small percentage that have decided to do that. So the majority are still afraid. There's a big percentage that are undecided. And then there's a smaller percentage of parents, as far as we understand right now, that are really ready to send their kids out. We've also realized that in the Houston area, at least, a majority of the large corporations are planning to continue working from home for the majority of their employees almost throughout the rest of this year. So that changes the picture and a little bit about what parents can and need to do with their children. So as a parent too, I know that my kids are bored. I'd love to get them engaged with something. I'm also a little worried, like when do I think it's safe for my kids to go out? And then what you said is like, what safety measures are sufficient? So all camps are decreasing group sizes significantly, usually in half or less. There's a big discussion if they can ask kids to wear masks, for example, or if the kids will be willing to do that. And then, of course, the sanitation. Everybody's scrambling to put in place procedures to sanitize and have everything as safe as possible and communicate that to parents. So parents understand that if you send them, these are the procedures. It's very different, but it depends a lot on the parents as well. Health checks, temperature checks at entry, nobody unauthorized that enters the facility. All those things are kind of coming in place and being developed right now.
Yeah. And are you, I guess, able to incorporate that information onto Campedia so that parents can scroll through and see who's doing what safety measures are in place?
Yes, exactly. So we've asked our camps, and we've been doing that to add to their camp description a section on their safety measures. So a lot of the camps that have been taking the lead to update their information, and the ones that have already decided what to do, there's still many in planning stages, but the ones that have, they've generally been adding a section on their camp description about their safety protocols, what they're doing to keep the space safe, to keep the children safe, to clean, drop off, pick up, all of these procedures. So yeah, that way parents can see which camps are updated, which camps have updated information, and what their specific kind of risk mitigation efforts they've put in place.
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like, you know, Campedia existing to be a one-stop shop for parents. You're really able to kind of provide that information. How much of that are you reliant on the providers to provide that information versus how much do you have to keep up with? What's the breakdown of that?
That's been one of our challenges early on. To be able to provide updated information to parents, we've worked really hard, and we're a tiny team, so it's been a challenge to update the information as we could find it. Now what we're seeing is, after we've got more involved in the community and created this sense of community, more and more of the providers are coming themselves and sending us information to update, or going themselves on the site to update their own information. So it's been shifting in that direction, but I would say that we're still doing a heavy lifting on that, probably about half and half at this point, as we try to keep updates coming for parents faster than some of the providers are providing themselves. You have to understand that many of them are so small, as they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. they don't even have the capability to quickly update their own websites or to make those decisions or answer phones or emails. Mm-hmm. So with us reaching out to them or talking to them and actually helping them figure out some of the options and telling them, okay, we can update this information really quickly for you, has been really helpful to them. And again, on the other side, to parents, because they get to see the updated information. Mm-hmm. But it's been and continues to be a little bit of a challenge.
It's really interesting to hear kind of the collaboration and the community that has kind of come out of this. I wonder, looking forward at what you kind of initially envisioned Campedia to be, and then kind of having to go with the flow of COVID-19, has the pandemic affected kind of your long-term, bigger picture view of where Campedia was going?
So actually the vision, I think, has not changed because our vision from the beginning was to be this kind of helper and one place for parents to come and be able to manage and find all the information for their kids and kind of plan their kids' activities and everything else related to that. So that vision has not changed. If anything, the pandemic forced us to move a lot of things forward. So we had to quickly kind of start implementing new things like the virtual events calendar that was supposed to be down the road, or allowing providers or having a way for providers to put on their classes, both in person or virtual classes. We've added that very quickly. So in a way, the focus on the community was also earlier than we planned, but it was the most wonderful thing that came out of this, because it really feels like everybody came together to give and to help each other. So that's been great. But bringing all these things forward and being able to be on top of everything has been also difficult because we didn't have the bandwidth to implement all this so fast. That's why it was down the road. All I can say is I think in the long run, this was a great, I mean, the community aspect of it is probably one of our strengths. It's going to become the foundation of us really growing and being part of Houston in a way that's a lot more embedded and everybody understands the value and the help that we bring by having everybody together and helping everybody. Mm-hmm. So although it's been a challenge, I think it's been a wonderful outcome from that point of view. And as a vision, in a way, it's getting us a little closer, although some of the things are clunkier than they would normally be because we tried to just get it out as soon as we could.
I love that you've kind of phrased that and see it as a little bit of a silver lining that it's kind of pushed you to get here faster. And it's actually not the first time I've heard that from startups who have said that, you know, they've had to kind of get everything in gear and get things out faster to kind of help accommodate for what's happening. So I think that's right in line with what I've heard. I wonder if there's been any major, I guess, growth plans that you've had to put on hold in terms of, you know, growing your team, or you mentioned raising money before. I don't know if you have plans on raising another equity round, or if anything's kind of gotten pushed back just because we really don't know. We still have a lot of questions about where the country's going in this way.
Oh, Natalie, you put your finger on the burn. Yes, so to kind of take a step back, our big plan was this summer to show the traction and the growth that we're planning for in this space. Our fundraising last year was a very tiny, essentially friends and family round that was just meant to get us through the spring. Now we have to we replanned and we're trying to make them stretch through next year. But our challenge is going to be fundraising. Our goal was to have or to go after a first seed round, angel round later this year. And that is going to look different. I don't yet know how it's going to look like. It really feels like it's going to be a lot more difficult. Although the type of traction we're hoping to show, it's going to change. We're not going to have the revenue that we're planning for. But on the other hand, I think the community build aspect of it that I mentioned is very powerful in itself. To me, it's more of a question if the angel investors, what they're going to be willing to consider under the circumstances, or if they're still as open to making investments as before, right? So we are, from that point of view, I'll be very honest, I'm quite worried, because although we're making our money stretch longer, our plan was to have this larger raise this year to allow us to really start growing. As you said, also growing our team, like we're tiny right now. Our bandwidth is so limited. I would love to be able to grow the team. There's a lot of need, and even to support the current operations, it would be great to have a larger team, but we cannot afford that, of course, at this point. I mean, everybody works out of passion right now, right?
Definitely. So
that's a big concern.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, it can still move forward, but like you said, it'll likely look different. So talking about fundraising, I wonder if you can share a little bit about how you crowdfunded your equity round, raising twice as much as you had initially sought. How did that go? Because I'm sure that's an avenue that some startup founders are looking toward, especially now in light of the kind of economic condition.
So that was a really interesting experience. So we worked with a local crowdfunding platform called Let's Launch. All of this is regulated, so you cannot do it on your own. It's essentially for small investments by the general public. And so we had an initial target, and we started, I don't remember exactly the date, probably July or August of last year, our offer. And it was open to the community. And we were very naive initially. I thought that, well, it's kind of like the crowd platforms where people buy T-shirts or something. People are going to come and invest a few hundred dollars each, and we're going to get thousands of investors and raise some money. And it didn't work that way. So pretty soon we realized that random people are not just coming and investing in random startups that they don't know anything about it. And by putting what we did, we put a lot of effort to reach out to our friends and family and our whole networks. And that's what really ended up making a big impact for us. So we spent a lot of time reaching out to everybody we knew, telling them about our company and the fact that we're open for investment, explaining the opportunity and the risk, and just saying, would you like to become part of our journey? It's something that we're growing. We're very excited, and our friends, and so it was mostly friends and family and colleagues and people from my previous jobs that believed mostly in the founding team. I think that was one thing that we learned. It wasn't as much as, oh, we found an interesting investment opportunity. There's a startup that looks cool and it's going to make me a lot of money. Most of the people that invested pretty much said, we believe in you. We believe in the founding team, in your capabilities, in your vision. So we're gonna invest to help you make it happen. That's really what tipped the balance for us. So it was a smaller number of investors that invested kind of larger amounts than we initially expected, and they pushed us over the line. But it took a lot of work. I mean, I'll be honest, it was a lot of effort, but in the end, it was amazing. And I'm really grateful for everybody who trusted us and put their money to help us kind of move towards our vision.
That's great context for startup founders who are maybe considering that, because I think it's something everyone maybe skips over in a step, but if you can make it work. But it's good to know that it's something you really gotta work for. It's not just something you launch your fundraising page.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of brings me to another question I have for you. It seems like Campedia, you know, kind of tapping into Let's Launch and Mass Challenge, it seems like you've really connected with the Houston innovation ecosystem. So how has that kind of helped you grow your company, and especially nowadays where we are distant both socially and just by being at home? So how have you found success from working with the Houston innovation ecosystem?
So you kind of pointed out some of the opportunities we had. When we got started on this, which was a year and a half ago, the ecosystem was much smaller than it is today, or it was last year. So just in 1 year, we saw these changes. One thing was Station Houston. So I started going to a lot of free events at Station, and eventually joined Station as a startup member, and that's been essentially my home away from home. Mm-hmm. That's where I was able to see other faces, just meet with their advisors and network, and really get that initial push and start both in terms of knowledge, and also, how should I say, they got me excited. I mean, they gave me that power to think, I can do this. This is something really cool, and I'm not alone in this. So I'm really thankful to Station for being that place for me. And then through them, I started getting connected more and more into the rest of the ecosystem. So I learned about Mass Challenge, actually Founders Institute, and some of the others. I actually got accepted into Founders Institute and Mass Challenge at the same time and decided to go with Mass Challenge, which was a nice experience. And kind of one of the best parts of Mass Challenge was the local community of startups, just meeting and talking and becoming friends with the other founders in the cohort was really amazing. We got some connections and some help connecting to certain kind of individuals like mentors or advisors. Something that I found interesting was because we're in a consumer industry and we're working with small businesses, the networks of all these organizations don't have as much from this type of world, right? The small kind of kids businesses are not part of the Houston startup ecosystem. But outside of that, a lot of resources were really great to get out of those organizations.
Sounds like you were ahead of what Founder Institute looks for. It's much more early stage. So it sounds like you made a good decision going to Mass Challenge. And it's been so lovely to hear kind of how you've managed growth and a successful pivot in this time. I wonder, kind of just to wrap up, if we could talk a little bit about what are you closely watching? What's that thing that keeps you up at night when we're thinking about the pandemic and, you know, the future of your startup? What's something that, you know, you are closely paying attention to that you're, you know, that could affect your business?
So the one thing that's always in the back of my mind is my own kids. What would I do with my kids? What would I want my kids to do? What would I be comfortable sending my kids to? And how would I, like, what opportunities or programs would I try to find and provide to my own children? So that's kind of a foundation for this, right? And then starting from there, the worry is, are we providing enough value for everybody? Are we really helping people? I don't want to just be another kind of marketplace or just a for-profit business that where profit is on the first place. Actually, we wrote a value document for the company where we said that profit should not be the main driver of business decisions. We're really into this for the community. So the worry of the disease and where this is going and what it's going to look like in the future, that's something that's in the back of my mind. I mean, are we going to return to a normal, to a completely normal kind of state where kids go to school every day, they go to camps all summer and so on? Or is it going to look different from now on? What's reasonable in terms of risk or exposure for kids in general? And then what are the programs that would benefit kids and families and parents the most? Because again, just sitting your kid in front of a screen for a few hours a day, it's not necessarily the best choice for anybody. So just really understanding, continuously thinking, how can we change or serve the parents and the providers and the children in the best way is something that's in the back of my mind all the time. And I keep thinking about it. And of course, there is no answer. There's still a lot of uncertainty, right? Even this disease, there's still so much we don't know about it that it's impossible to make long-term plans and conclusions. I think we have to be flexible and we have to think of the well-being of everybody as a driving decision-making tool.
That's great. I mean, you're a professional dad. I mean, you have your concerns of your kids, but you also factor that into your, you know, business platform, basically. So that's really great. And do you ever kind of bounce ideas off of your daughters and see what they think of something?
Oh, yeah. they've been drawing marketing pictures for me, for the company, and they're going to be the guinea pigs on our first kind of the virtual camp that we're putting together with the rest of the community. Yeah. They're going to be in our dry run to give everybody feedback. So they're they're part of this. They know what daddy is doing and they're excited. My older one is like, when I grow up, I just want to work for Compedia.
Oh, that's so cute. Oh, that's so cute. Well, I'm glad that that's kind of, that you're able to bring them in that way. And I'm sure they really appreciate that too. Thank you so much for speaking to me today about all of this. It's really heartwarming to kind of see the growth of Campedia and how you've been able to kind of pivot a little bit to accommodate and help parents like yourself. So thanks again. And I look forward to seeing kind of the rest of Campedia's growth.
Thank you very much, Natalie. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. And I'm looking forward to the future as well. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Be sure to rate and review the show and join me next week for another interview with a Houston Innovator.